Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefrey, and this is episode number 294. I want to thank you guys for joining in each week. We truly appreciate those of you that like, share, comment. Just helps us continue to highlight the great people that we have in our profession. Also appreciate those of you that leave a rating and a review on iTunes, as that just helps me help as many coaches as I possibly can. So if you wouldn't mind, if you haven't done so yet, jump over to iTunes and leave a rating and a review. Also want to thank our sponsor for this year, for 2019, Train Heroic. Just a phenomenal group of guys. I just had dinner with them at the NSCA conference. Ben Crookston and Josh and Adam and the whole crew. And just great people, you know. And like I say all the time, I only partner with companies that I believe in, both the product and the people. And they knock it out of the park. They're not just a delivery system. One of the conversations I had was we have a bunch of coaches that are looking for ways to create additional revenue streams. And so they have a delivery system where you can get to, get your workouts out to your athletes, but you could also create some workouts that you can sell in their marketplace to make a little residual income, which I think is really important, especially this time of year when you got a lot of coaches that are seeing all the challenges. So it's great. We also released our app this week, Play Pro. If you haven't checked that out, download that in the App Store. Phenomenal resource. Very much like a Netflix style type of experience, and just a game changer with the way that that we produce content. I think, this week I'm joined by a good friend of mine, Sheldon Stevens. He's a strength coach for human performance. He's a human performance specialist for the U.S. Special Operations Command, and I've spent some time in that space. And we're not only lucky to have everybody that's serving in that space, but we're also lucky to have the people behind the scenes that are preparing our soldiers for the many, many things that we have no idea that go on, but do on a daily basis. So, Shelton, man, appreciate you coming on the show, brother.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Shelton, we've known each other for quite some time now. I mean, you've been at Liberty. You were at Arkansas State. You were at Southern Miss for a period of time.
Yeah.
Nova Southeastern, Florida State, LSU. I think maybe Wofford in there maybe as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which one of those experiences, I know they all contribute, but which one experience that had the most impact on you as a strength coach?
That's a tough question. Every place you want to take a little bit from every place, and that's what makes you a strength coach. I would probably have to say it would have to be Nova Southeastern. That's where I got my first head position. But I was about 23 at the time. And, everybody knows that's pretty young to be a head strength coach. So you don't really know much. So I was put into the fire pretty quickly there.
Yeah.
So learned a lot, got the opportunity to build, a multi-million-dollar weight room there. Their first athletic weight room, pretty much had no idea how to design a facility at all, and I kind of through contacts and, I get to sit in on meetings with the president and athletic administration. And it was unbelievable to see how that stuff worked, like behind the scenes. But everything went well, and I kind of learned how to use the administration and the student body to my advantage, because that's how we got the weight room. We shared the rec center,
right.
So we had to use the weight room from about 6 to about 8, and then I had to get the rest of the athletes in from about 3:30 to 6. So it was crowded. I mean, we had multiple teams in there at once, and we had to cut off a section of the weight room. And all the student population was just like, why do they have to block off the facility? Like, we want to lift too. And I was like, you know what? It's not my fault. Here's a pen and paper, sign a petition. And we had tons and tons of signatures, and it got presented to the president. And within a year, boom, got it done. So kind of learned a lot of things there at Nova.
Yeah. Being at South Florida, I mean, we went from a startup program. I mean, the university was created in 1956, and then to start a football program in basically 2000 and try to take it, you know.
Yeah.
What you would, I think you would agree with me. I mean, these coaches that are getting experience at, in these Taj Mahals from the get-go don't nearly have the same experience as those of us that I'm at a 2,000 square foot weight room.
You know,
two platforms, four old squat racks, and you have to learn to be creative. You have to learn to put in the time and effort. But when we had nine straight lift groups.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, my office, first, my office wasn't even an office. I was, had a desk and a chair in the equipment room. And then they moved me. Yeah. And then I felt special because they moved me underneath the basketball bleachers in a little storage closet. And I, pretty much like Harry Potter. I mean, that's how I felt, you know? And you know, I felt special. I had my own door and didn't have any windows or anything, but I had my own space.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, a lot of these younger coaches are going into it, you know, they're lucky.
Well, I don't think, I mean, again, I mean, obviously you want to take advantage of opportunities and
absolutely
don't want to hit on people that get a great opportunity to be at a Taj Mahal, but
yeah,
but don't be scared of those small universities where you might be able to be a head strength coach and get that experience. Cause it's invaluable.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
Well, you don't, you know, you don't become a head strength coach. I know this, you know, being 23 years old, 22 years old, like I was, without making a freaking million mistakes. What's one of the biggest mistakes you made and how you learned from it?
Oh man. I would say when I first took over as a head man at Nova, I would say I didn't really learn how to delegate things. You know, we had a GA at the time and I was trying to fight to get more staff and more staff. I didn't really understand how important it was to build relationships within the administrative department. So I guess when I was younger, I was just stuck in the weight room and that's all I wanted to do was just stay in the weight room, train athletes. And that was it. That was where my mistake was. I realized it was very important. If the AD wants you to go golfing, you go golfing, you know, I mean, if you know, if they want you to go out and have a drink, and even if you don't drink, go. Trust me, like those things are very, very, way more than what you're doing in the weight room. They do not care about that. I mean, they care about the, obviously the student athlete's health, but if you have a chance to do those things outside of the weight room, they are a must because they will get you, get things done and it will help you along the way because people go other places and they will remember the time you spent with them.
Yeah, it's so important. I mean, anytime that you can get outside of the four walls of the weight room, build relationships, you know, mean something and mean something to them. And not only that, but going and, you know, fitting into their environment. So if you're walking around and you're up in administration, put a pair of khakis on and a polo.
Yeah. That's another one. Yeah.
If you go out with a bunch of coaches, make sure that you're always, you know, that you're always being judged, you know, so don't go get sloppy drunk and the whole deal, but you know, just go and you know, I mean, there's been plenty of times I don't drink a whole lot, you know, but there's been plenty of times where I've gone to the bartender and I've gotten water in a vodka cup, you know, and played the game, you know,
it's
part of it, you know. So I agree with that wholeheartedly. You know, you recently made the switch from, you know, collegiate at Liberty, you know, to tactical space. I mean, there's something different about taking the oath to be a strength coach, you know, that first day. But talk a little bit about the differences. I know we just had Major General Frost give a presentation at the NSCA talking about, you know, potentially 1,500, 2,000 jobs opening up for strength coaches.
Yeah, it's about to blow up.
In 2019. Talk a little bit about the military, working in the military, the differences between that and collegiate.
Well, I guess the first thing, the big difference is the way they interview. The actual board interview, everything you see on TV, pretty much you're sitting in a chair and you have pretty much a general and a sergeant major and you have everybody in front of you. So it's very, very intimidating, which I like that pressure. I mean, it's nerve wracking, but it makes you a better interviewer. Let's just say that interviewee. So that's first and foremost. I didn't expect that. I kind of thought it was going to happen, but I didn't expect it. But from a job perspective, I would say, man, these guys, I mean, they go 110 miles an hour. I would say the number one thing is load management. That's big for us. And getting these guys to understand less is more.
Sure.
We are pulling these guys back more than actually giving them what they want because they don't understand that stuff because they're so used to just keep digging the hole and digging the hole. And we're constantly trying to get them out and understand the recovery methods. And another big thing is individualized programming. It's completely optional for these guys. They don't have to be on your program. So every program is different. I have about 50 different programs going on at once, and they're all different. We'll have the meat and potatoes in there, but if they want a little bit of CrossFit or they want a little bit of this and a little bit of that on their program, you got to throw it in there because, again, the key is to get them to buy in, and they have to stay bought in because they can leave whenever they want to. Another awesome, awesome thing about this job is they view the strength coach as a professional. They view the strength coach as a professional. So nobody's telling you, you don't have a sports coach in your ear and all those things, which, again, that's part of it. We've all dealt with it. But they view the strength conditioning coach, the physical therapist, the doctors, they take us very seriously. And they tend to really, really listen. And they're locked in. So it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool to see and be a part of.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many cool things about it. And like I said, you honestly do feel like you're doing your part a little bit to, for the country, which is probably the most important part. There's always good with bad. I mean, there's definitely challenges in the military as well.
Yes.
Especially big army, it's slow moving and it takes a while to get things through and those types of things. But the good far outweighs the bad, that's for sure. And these jobs are going to be a huge opportunity. I've got to tell my story because you'll get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
Special Forces. So the second day maybe I was there. One of the guys came up and was like, we had an SF group in, and one of the guys came up and asked me what to do. And so I told him to go over and do pull-ups to failure, And so, I move off to the next guy and I'm talking to the next guy and putting out fires. And all of a sudden I just hear this guy screaming. I mean, it's like, it's like a minute later.
Yeah.
And he's screaming at the top of his lungs, trying to bust out another rep. And it ends up blacking out, drops, busts his chin open. A couple of guys, I'm panicking. I run over there. A couple of guys walk up. I mean, they just like, it's whatever. Walk up, look at the guy, scream out medic, and then they go right back to work. And the medic comes in and stitches the guy up. And he goes back and he grabs the freaking, he tries to grab the pull-up bar. And I'm like,
tries again.
You're done. And, what I had to learn was that, how you frame things, was important. You can't tell those guys to go to failure because they don't know what that is.
Yep.
But they're not nearly as athletic as some of the guys that I've dealt with. I mean, you think they're world beaters, man. They're freaking, they operate at another level, but athletically you've seen better. But the mind and tapping into that, what do you think is, having been in both areas, what do you think that you can take away from building a mindset in your athletes at the collegiate level, having now worked in special forces?
Building a mindset. I think the whole mental toughness word gets thrown around a lot. And I think in the collegiate setting, when it comes to mindfulness, I think it's the kind of athlete you try to recruit. I mean, it's all about the head coach. If you want somebody that's tough as nails and, this backwoods country and drinks out of the water fountain, I mean, you recruit that guy or girl. Again, I mean, that's all starts from the top. To me, it's through experiences. Now, do I believe that a freshman can change their whole mindset by their experiences through college and learn? Absolutely. Absolutely. But the whole mental toughness thing and coaches asking you, hey, like, it's so easy to make somebody tired. I mean, that's the easy part, the hard part is educating these coaches on why we don't need to do it. Coach Jackson, Scott Jackson at Liberty.
I lost him here. Shelton, you there? Let's try this again. Just 1 second, guys. Going to get him back on here. Go ahead and ask some questions. There's about 30 something people on right now. I'm going to do a quick lightning round at the end and just ask some questions. Got froze up there for a second. Go ahead. You're talking about Liberty at somebody at Liberty.
Yeah. I don't know if it's my connection or yours. I don't know what's going on, but so Coach Scott Jackson, the baseball coach at Liberty, you know, every baseball coach wants to do the Omaha Challenge. Again, it's the strength coach's job to educate the coach on why they don't need to do that. Why, you know, we need to spend 2 or 3 weeks on training instead of just digging them in a hole and putting them in a hole, if that makes sense. To me, it's, again, like, it's what kind of athlete you try to recruit.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'll tell you one thing. Having walked, you know, walked in those shoes for a little bit, that was the number one thing that I walked away, is that there's so much our talent identification process at the college level could be so much better. I mean, they don't waste time. I mean, you talk intelligence, you talk IQ, you talk personality, the interview process. It's so much more important than we give it credit, instead of just going and looking how many stars they got. And I mean, sometimes I've had athletes where I'm like, there's no way this guy, you know, our coach has even had a conversation with this guy. I can tell them one conversation.
Yeah. That they don't, I mean, and that was
the mental makeup.
And that was one of the things that we talked about the other day at work is, you know, we have these IQ test scores and we have these scores when they come in from their boards and their testing, but our best shooter out of all of our guys pretty much had the lowest IQ. So you can't, there's no really comparison there, you know? So you got, again, you got to take it with a grain of salt. You really don't get to know the guy until they come in.
Yeah. I think that's anything. I mean, there's so much, I mean, you know, Tom Brady, I mean, tested awful and didn't even start in his college team for most of it. And, ended up being all world. Right. I mean, it's definitely, there's going to be outliers, but I mean, the bulk of the group needs to be made up of that core, you know, that core group that buys into the values and the characteristics of the team and can fit with the personalities of the coaches. And as coaching departments, you know, as strength coaches, we need to try to foster that as best we can in our talent identification.
Absolutely.
But I agree with you 100%. You know, you went, I mean, through all those experiences that I mentioned, you've done almost every sport. What do you believe, you know, I mean, obviously there's advantages to working with a variety of sports. What do you think those advantages are, and what's maybe some of the sports that best prepared you for your current role?
I think the advantages are, you know, learning different sporting demands. I mean, that's obvious. I mean, everybody says, you know, well, you can train the athletes the same. Well, you can, but we got to understand that every sport, every athlete's different. Okay. Right. And going out there to practices and watching practice and seeing those things unfold and seeing how they move on the field or on the court, that's crucial to how you not only program, but communicate. And that's another key aspect. You got to know how to relate to these athletes. You know, if you know nothing about the game of basketball or volleyball or whatever, that shows. And those athletes see that. You got to understand the sport. You got to understand the positions, their schedules, their practice schedules. A swimmer, holy crap. Like, their schedules are brutal.
Right.
You know, working with swimming at Liberty. I mean, it's go, go, go all the time, you know, and it's just that I learned that from seeing it and being a part of it and being all in.
Yeah. I think that you made up such a great point there, where you have to be invested in the sport or the, you know, the population that you're working with. And that means, I mean, you didn't play all those sports, but you had to go and be able to speak the vocabulary, to know the game, to know the demands, to be there and support all sorts of things. I remember, you know, working with SF, you know, going and going to Green School and actually participating with them, you know, for a day and, you know, jumping off of the freaking, the tower for everyone.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know, the whole day, my back's still messed up from that. You know? But it's an important part of the process is going and, you know, learning what makes them tick, you know.
Yeah.
When you know what makes them tick, oftentimes that can lead to, a better understanding and for programming and whatnot.
Well, I mean, it's the same thing here in the military setting. I mean, these guys want to see you out there during their training. You know, they want you to stay up all night long when they're training, you know, and they do that. I mean, that's their schedule. And they want to see you out there. They want to know that you care. You know, I've had guys, I've been rucking with guys. I mean, I've had guys, I mean, that stuff is tough, man.
Yeah.
That stuff is tough. Like, first time I went, I made the mistake of not wearing two pairs of socks. I got blisters all over the place.
Right.
You know, but I wouldn't know that if I didn't go.
Yeah, agreed. And you know, especially a population like that, that's very, you know, that's probably got a healthy skepticism of anybody, any outsider anyways. You better find a way to be able to build a relationship there for sure.
Yeah.
You know, with, you know, having been, you know, through those different experiences, you know, now, and you've got kind of a leadership role, you've been a head strength coach, you've been an assistant strength coach.
Yep.
What is, you know, what are the coaches that are watching, what do they need to know about, you know, what makes a good assistant, what makes a good head strength coach? And before you answer that, I mean, some of you guys are asking about your questions. We'll hit those at the end in a lightning round. But go ahead, Sheldon.
I would say something that Matt Shadid, he's the director at UMass now. He told me that, you know, every day is a job interview, especially when you're assistant. Again, you want to make your boss's job easy. You want to keep that paperwork off their desk. You want to pretty much think ahead and not let the director think. I mean, before they even get to you and ask you to clean the towels, fold the towels, you know, make sure the clips are on a certain setting in the weight room. That stuff should already be done. And at the end of the day, they have nothing to worry about. So pretty much, I mean, imagine another person told me before, imagine there's a camera in the weight room and it instantly takes a snapshot. You know, are you on the floor with your arms folded? Are you coaching? Do you have energy? I mean, that kind of resonated with me a lot too. I mean, what do I look like on the floor? Especially if, say, you walked into a weight room and, you know, again, every day's a job interview and you see three assistants with their hands folded and they're not coaching. You see the other three with energy. I mean, which guys are going to pop out? The guys with energy.
Yeah, somebody jumped in. Coach Bird said, you know, uses that line every day. Every day is a job interview. And I always use, you know, you're in the shop window, you know. And so if somebody wants to step outside of the window and was observing without hearing you coach, could they see that you're coaching?
Yeah.
And are you being dynamic? Are you coaching with, you know, all three phases? Are you kinesthetic, verbally, you know, and through demonstration, visually? You know,
absolutely.
And so I think it's so important that, you know, the young coaches, that you recognize that, you're being evaluated each and every moment. You know, as a head strength coach, you have to create that, you have to develop that eye. You have to see everything.
Yep.
You have to see that, like, the collar is off the second, the other side on its 12th rack. You know, you need to be able to catch that. But more importantly, that's the part of the process of going through internships and part-time assistants and all those types of things is that's how that's developed. And everybody wants to jump to the end.
Yeah.
But you have to develop that. It doesn't mean you can't develop it quickly. I mean, you did it at 23. I was a head strength coach in the NFL at 21.
Yeah.
You know, in NFL Europe. I mean, doesn't mean you can't develop it quickly, but I know me at 21 and me at 43 are two different, totally different people.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. I mean, and that's the thing. I mean, again, if you're looking for internships and you're looking for certain GA positions, really dive deep into the program, you know, get to know the program, get to know the coaches, pay attention to what the weight room looks like. If those fine little details, I mean, I didn't learn that until my internship at LSU with Coach Moffitt. I mean, logos up, everybody on the staff cleans, you know, very detail oriented, you know, that process. And that's where, you know, it carried over and continued to carry over, you know, as long as I've been in the profession. And it's, again, I know that everybody says attention to detail. Do you really do it? You know, like, are you, it's just the little things like pull-ups, you know, everybody had a dead hang. Are you really coaching them to go to a dead hang, or are you allowing it to happen? I mean, that's the difference between good coaches and great coaches. You know, are you allowing it to happen in the weight room?
Well, that's ultimately the definition of strength, right? I mean, Jeff Nichols jumped on. He said truth. I mean, God bless you both. That's exactly right. I mean, what your culture is what you allow. You know,
yeah.
And if you allow somebody that you not go to a dead hang, then that's you. That's not, you know, that's not the athlete, you know. And going back to what you said earlier on, I mean, I agree that there needs to be a certain level of open-mindedness and commitment from the athlete. But if we don't have a growth mindset as a coach and believe that these athletes can change and can be every bit as mentally tough or whatever as, you know, as our military soldiers, and our military soldiers can be every bit as athletic as our athletes, then, you know, we're in the wrong profession. I mean, we got into this profession to affect change. And
it's contagious, Coach. I mean, it's all contagious, right? I mean, even from it's the small, even with the military, it's, they don't know how to do pull-ups. They don't know how to do push-ups. They don't know how to squat. They don't know how to do those things. It's teaching them how to properly do it. And even when it comes down to cleaning the weight room, putting the stuff up, I mean, again, you might not affect everybody, but if they see you clean up their room, and I say it's their room because it is theirs, is slowly that stuff is contagious and they'll start picking up on things. You know, the guy beside you on the rack that you're coaching up, he's going to see like, okay, all coaches out here, I better clean up these bumpers. You know, I mean, that stuff, it just happens over time. It's, again, it's a culture thing.
Well, that says more about you than it does about anything, is if you're detail oriented and you make sure that the room is the way it should be, then your athletes see that, your administration sees that, they're more willing to give you resources because they know you're going to take care of it. You know,
absolutely.
It speaks volumes. And more importantly, it teaches your athletes the right way of going about attacking this world, you know, and having pride in what you do. So I couldn't agree with you more. I want to get to some of these questions, you know, lightning round, just quick answers for these as you go. JRAP51 asked, how much of an emphasis should resistance training play on pre-selection?
Well, I mean, resistance training, you should never stop resistance training. I mean, you just got to be smart on, again, load management. So, and what your emphasis is. I mean, if you're out there rucking miles on miles and running miles on miles, don't expect yourself to keep weight on. I mean, again, you got to understand what's your goal. Like, if you're trying to gain weight, you should be on a strict hypertrophy program. You should be eating. Like if you weigh 215, you want to weigh 250, you got to eat like a 250, you know? So, So, I mean, if you're whatever your expectations are, but if you're training for that specific task or that selection, you just got to be smart about your recovery. Just because the test, say you're rucking the 40 mile, if it's a 40 mile ruck test, doesn't mean you have to train 40 miles, build up to it, be smart about your progressions.
Casey Callison asked, what type of monitoring methods are you using, and what are some of the KPIs that you use both in the short term and the long term?
I think short term, I would say nothing beats communication. Just going out there, communicating, hey, how do you feel today? Are you sore? Are you tired? Did you sleep? Nothing beats that. Now, when it comes down to the tech stuff, we use Fatigue Science for sleep, MegaWave for HRV, right eye tracking for concussions. Force plates on a daily basis, force plates jumps, just kind of see what kind of power output they're giving for that day. Sometimes we'll do the grip testing, you know, just kind of see what the upper body, you know, where they're at. Could be an elbow. Again, a lot of climbing, a lot of stuff's going on out there, so that could affect their day. That's how we kind of alter the program and what's going on. So, but yeah, nothing beats communication and know what's going on and talking face to face.
Absolutely. Amen. ESXCO asked, does relative strength predict running speed? Basically, do you believe like deadlift max translates to a faster 40?
No, I don't believe that. Now, I do believe, you know, strength does play something into it, but that's, again, talk to your mom and dad. You know, I mean, that's when it comes to genetics and how fast you are. I mean, I think you can get somebody a little bit faster, but I can't take a 4.8 and take it to a 4.2. That's pretty much, I mean, that's impossible. So it's you could teach them technique and breathing and posture and those things. I mean, that might sharpen the sword a little bit more. But yeah, when it comes to big changes like that, not too much.
Yeah. I mean, obviously if you're deficient, then it's going to play a big role, right?
Absolutely.
But if you got that bucket topped off, like most people do sometimes, then it's going to be fine. A lot of questions. I mean, I know, there's a bunch of people that have asked specifically about these military jobs.
Yeah.
The process of going about getting more of these military jobs. I know, I mean, USAjobs.gov, but I mean, these jobs that are popping up both in special forces and big military, what's your recommendation? How to go about doing it?
Well, I mean, I was lucky. I tell you what, I wasn't lucky. I was blessed to get this position. I mean, I got this position through just connections. I mean, it's my good friend, Mike Kelly. He was my assistant at Liberty. He went to Summer Strong 11 this year, spoke with Zach Woodfin. Zach Woodfin knows somebody with NSCA, NSCA knew somebody at Exos, and then kind of the ripple effect there is how I kind of got to know these positions. But right now it's a little up in the air. So we just got a new contractor, KBR Weil. So all these Exos positions in and out. Exos is no longer, that's not a thing. So now it's KBR Weil. There's no more subcontractor, if that makes sense. So, you know, Exos was a subcontractor and Booz Allen was the main. So KBR is our main contractor now, which means more money for strength coaches, which is good. That's good. But yeah, there's a ton of positions about to open up. They're starting to realize how important this initiative is. They're all over the country. I mean, it's just, again, just talking to the right people. NSCA is pretty much involved a lot now in the tactical setting, which is great to see. You know, Nate Palin and those guys are good guys to contact and talk to. It's just getting your name out there, asking questions. It's hard. I mean, you have to be patient. I mean, security checks and secret clearance. And again, you can't just apply for a job and you're going to get it. I mean, it's going to take a while for that stuff to go through.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
I think, I mean, I would add to it. I mean, you got to start, networking is always going to be the best. I mean, Coach Bird just jumped in and said, when I trained SEALs, I knew SEALs. So that helped build a network.
And yeah. There you go. Yep.
I think knowing people in and getting a chance to, I mean, there's several strength coaches that are in the military community at this point. So making sure that you reach out to them. But, you know, follow USAjobs.gov. You know, there's going to be posts there. What Shelton was talking about, there's a difference between GS positions, which are government services positions that are hired through the military, versus contract positions that basically a business had won a contract with the military to supply coaches. And there is some turnover there. There is some risk. You know, it's usually 1 year contracts with some of these contracting groups. Funding can dry up from the military, so that's a risk as well. But they are paying pretty well these days, and it's definitely worth keeping your eye on. And if you can get in, it's better. You know, once you get in, then it's now you hear about GS positions, you hear about other units and things that might be fitting more of what you're working for. We'll go with the last question here because I'm running out of juice. Actually, I don't have my charger, but. Katie asked, what's the difference between a good intern and a bad intern in your mind?
Oh, man. A good intern. Again, I would say the same thing as an assistant. I mean, very detail-oriented, getting things done before you even think about it. I was blessed to have assistants at Liberty that I would delegate things to. And, again, it's having that niche. I mean, we had one intern that would clean things constantly, just go out on the floor and change dumbbells and clips and do those things. And we have another that kind of, would stand there. Katie Guillory is her name. She was more of like organizer. She'd stand out on the floor and rub her chin and be like, yeah, I don't think that needs to go there. I think it needs to go there. You know,
right.
That's the benefit of having females on staff. Cause I'm not good at that stuff. But so having them to organize things, it's great, but just having that niche, I mean, bringing something to the table, as much as I'm a big believer in if you're done with what you need to get done during the day, you need to leave the office. But the best time to stay and talk and build relationships is after hours.
Yeah.
Big believer in that. Just kind of everybody needs to just kind of cool their jets for an hour or two after the day's over. And we all just sit there with our feet up in the office. And those are when the best conversations happen. And the people that stay, I mean, I'm not going to get on anybody if they leave, but if they stay, that's a tally mark in my head. Like, hey, they want to stick around and talk, and that means something.
Yeah. I think being the first one in and the last one out, that's going to go a long way, but
Yeah.
My mark was always, am I going to remember you when you're gone? I mean, did you do something to add value to our group? You know, and so I always give the story of Paul Cipriano, who, this was back, you know, when Vibration was just coming out, and, you know, we couldn't afford, you know, the fancy force, power plates and things like that. But he went out, bought a car buffer on his own, came in the next day. It was buffing guys, you know. And then I went out the next day and bought 5 car buffers. And from that moment on, every time we pulled one of those out, I remembered him for that. And that was something that, find a way to leave your mark on the program, I think, is important. But
absolutely. Absolutely.
We want to end the show, just a couple resources here. And so just, quickly here, what, give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Oh man. I would probably say, again, every day is a job interview. I mean, that's probably pretty good advice. Again, you're constantly being evaluated, whether that be your boss, that be administration, that be coaches, athletes, somebody's always watching. And again, Coach Shadid, Matt Shadid, he always used to tell me, like, you know, you got to be consistently consistent. And that was something that, you know, I had to wrap my head around. He called me through the office one day. He's like, you're a good coach, but when you're consistently consistent, you're a great coach, you know, and that kind of stuck to me, like, okay, like I need to bring it every single day, no matter what, how I feel, doesn't matter. It's not about you. Okay. It's about the athletes.
Right. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
I would say from a strength conditioning standpoint, I would say probably Strength Conditioning for Team Sports, Paul Gamble. It's a great book. I like when smart guys keep it simple in the book. I mean, it makes great books. Outside of strength conditioning, I would say how to build and sustain a strength conditioning culture, or a championship culture, I'm sorry, by Jeff Jansen. A great book. He talks a lot about culture, core values, things of that nature that I took a lot from. I mean, there's notes all over that thing. App, I would say easy. I have to say that a camera. I mean, you know, a picture says 1,000 words. You can show athletes things. You can show your coaches things. And, of course, the podcast app. I mean, podcasts out there. I mean, I love listening to podcasts, especially on the drive to work. It's crucial to me just kind of, you know, learn as you go. You know, your podcast, Brute Strength podcast, I think outside of strength conditioning, Order of Man is a great one. It's a great one. But, yeah, those three for sure.
Oh, that's awesome, man. Well, you know, we, like I said, we've known each other for a while, and I just appreciate the way that you go about your business and the way that you, pour into the people that you work with. You know, I remember, you know, how much you put effort into strengthening the staff at Liberty and other places that you've been, and, you know, a reflection of a good leader is somebody that's willing to put their staff members first. And you've always done that. So I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with everybody.
No, I appreciate you, Coach. Thanks for having me.
And everybody watching, appreciate you guys as well. If you like this, you know, make sure you share it. I'm sure Shelton will probably maybe go back in and answer some of these questions that we didn't get to. But if you guys are liking the live stream, let me know that. Like I said, if you can leave a rating review, that helps as well. And also make sure you download the Play Pro app and check that out, because I think it's a fantastic resource. But appreciate everybody for jumping on. Shelton, thanks so much, man. You're a stud, and really enjoyed it, buddy.
No, I appreciate it, Coach, and all your followers. I mean, again, I'm pretty good at answering emails and questions. Reach out. I'm a big believer in not big time anybody. So reach out to me, and I'll answer all your questions.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. See you later.
All right, Coach.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey, on Facebook and YouTube at facebook.com/Ron.McKeefery. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.